The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fernelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
Hey, y'all. I'm Bud Elliott, and this is my college football summer school series on Cover 3. I bring on the team experts from the 24/7 sports staff and ask them the questions I care about. No fluff. Which players will be toughest to replace? What position groups are sneakily better or worse than I realize? We get you the scoop on each team in 20 minutes or less. Let's go. Hey guys, Bud Elliott here. Welcome back into the Cover 3 College Football Podcast. And this is my summer school series today. We're talking Houston, and I want to go right to the source. That's Joseph Duarte of the Houston Chronicle. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, bud.
Absolutely. So an interesting year for Houston last year, 8-5 overall, some awesome games, some really puzzling games that obviously made a little more sense to you when I read your, to me, when I read your coverage about some of the injuries that they suffered and some interesting coaching decisions at times in some of the ball games. Let's jump into the offensive side of the ball, which is where there was a lot of positivity last year, a top 20 offense, according to, you know, Bill Connolly with his SP Plus ratings, but you do lose Clayton Toon on that side of the football, but Donovan Smith comes in from Texas Tech. Is it appropriate to assume he'll be the starter, and what have you heard about how he's looked?
It is. They brought in Donovan Smith from Texas Tech. They had Lucas Coley, who was previously at Arkansas, also on the roster, but just based on experience, and this is a key year for Houston. You know, you wish, if you're Dana Holgorsen, that you had Clayton Toon for another year. But you're starting from scratch at that position, and going into the Big 12, you really got to go with the guy who has experience. And oh, by the way, Donovan Smith played in the Big 12. He actually beat Houston in Week 2 last year with an incredible comeback. But just coming out of the spring, they haven't officially announced the starter, but I mean, you can read between the lines. He's got the most experience. He's a guy that they feel fits their offense. Feels like they'll be able to stretch the field. Probably doesn't have as much mobility as Clayton Toon did, but they still feel like in the passing game, they'll be able to do plenty. The key is finding another Tank Dell, and those don't grow on trees. And he's certainly a guy that they're going to miss, and it's really going to have to be by committee in terms of who Donovan Smith is going to spread the ball around to.
You mentioned loss of Tank Dell last year, 155 targets, 109 catches. Now he's off to the NFL for good reason. They take Josh Cobbs from Wyoming. They take what, Stephon Johnson from Oklahoma? Is it Oklahoma State?
Can't remember. Oklahoma State.
And also they took Michael Laughlin, the tight end from West Virginia. You kind of alluded to it with the committee comment there. Are any of these guys standing out above the rest, though, in terms of the transfers that they took?
I've heard a lot about Cobb. They're really high on him. But really, the guy coming back, Matthew Golden, he'll be a sophomore this year. He was one of the highly rated players as part of that 2022 class. And they feel like he can step into that role. They have Joseph Manjack, who was formerly at USC. He missed some time last year with a hand injury. And then what they've done just from a standpoint of recruiting, they've got three guys coming in who are among the top 10 in the modern recruiting era. And that's Jonah Wilson, which I keep wanting to call him Jonah Hill. And I hope that doesn't get into a story at some point. Jonah Wilson. You have Mikhail Harrison Pilot, who was the really big get. And then you have a guy that they feel like they can do some different things with Parker Jenkins. So right there, they're going to be young, but the mixtures of the transfers that you mentioned and then the returners, you know, they feel like they've got some speed, especially, and some talent that maybe won't be just this year, but at least moving forward.
So on the offensive line, I'm really excited to talk about this. And I mean, maybe it's not exciting, but to me it is. And that's why we do summer school. They have lost a lot of pieces on the offensive line, and they brought in a number of pieces. I think four transfers in, I think five transfers out, maybe more. It's kind of hard to keep track over 3,000 players in the transfer portal. What are you seeing in this offensive line group? And is it a thing where, is this a big step back? Or all the guys who left, do they all matter to the team? Because some of the guys didn't play very much, but I'm not really sure the level of transfer right. They took. This is a unit I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around.
Yeah, I think the number was seven at last check for the offseason. And a lot, like you said, a lot of these guys were guys that got limited time, backup roles. The big one was Cameron Johnson. He was the left guard, all conference type guy. That was a little bit of a surprise for them. But for the most part, you know, I guess at the right tackle spot with Robinson was also a big one. But, you know, they bring back Patrick Paul, and he's the anchor. He's the left tackle, 6'7", 300, and I believe he's 310 or so, 315, maybe even 320. So he's their guy. And then they have Jack Freeman, who's the center. The interesting thing, Bud, about all this is it sort of plays into while they don't have the guys coming in just yet, it's part of a big picture. They knew going into the Big 12 they needed different type of bodies, especially on both lines. They had to get bigger, more physical from the American to the Big 12, and that sort of has opened things up where they can do that. I did a comparison on projected O linemen in terms of size for the other Texas schools, and Houston's actually along lines in alignment with the other ones in terms of size with TCU. You know, TCU's offensive line was really good last year and really big. With what they have back this year with Texas, Baylor, and Texas Tech, Houston's, you know, size matches up pretty well. So it's going to be a process. They know they're not going to be able to get them all in 1 year. You know, they have Demetrius Hunter. He was a Oklahoma commit from last year's class that plays the backup center spot. They probably get him in there at some point this year. Just because they're going to lose Freeman. But, you know, for the most part, they've been able to address some things in the portal. But, you know, they're going to have to – this is a more multiple-year type deal when it comes to getting your guys. And the fact that Patrick Paul will be in the NFL draft at this point next year, or will be in camp, you know, those are spots that they're going to have to fill some sooner rather than later.
Sounds like the offense should still be a pretty good offense, maybe not quite as good as it was last year with the loss of the quarterback and Dell and a couple of the linemen. Is that fair to say?
Well, we're not even mentioning they lost Alton McCaskill. I mean, that was supposed to be guy in the backfield. He missed all of last year with the ACL injury. We talked to him in the spring. Everything looked good. He was happy. He was healthy. And then a couple of days after the end of the spring, he, you know, a weekend passes, he goes into Dana Holgorsen's office and tells him, you know what, I'm going to transfer. And, you know, just talking with Holgorsen, they were completely blindsided by this. You know, there's a immediate connection that he could go to Colorado, and hey, guess what, he ends up at Colorado. So, you know, Houston from the NIL standpoint isn't quite able to provide or offer what some of the other Power Five schools are doing. And that was the big one that they lost. That was the one that they couldn't lose with McCaskill. But I thought they rebounded nicely to get Tony Mathis Jr. from West Virginia, led the team last year and rushing. He's kind of a physical potential every down back, and they can mix him with the speedster Stacy Sneed and another bruiser and Brandon Campbell, who was at USC. So it's not quite having McCaskill and his 1,000 yards and 16 touchdowns from a couple years ago, but at least they were able to go in and get someone heading into the summer.
I assume that they, and obviously, like it's hard to know, but because they're as you know salty, I guess would be the word, or annoyed that McCaskill would leave, especially so late in the process. Is it fair to assume that he was healthy and on track for a big year?
Yeah, that was the key. Okay. I mean, he didn't go through. You know, there was no contact in the spring. But all indications, you know, we watched him on, you know, he was posting daily or videos or weekly videos on Instagram about his progress, and he looked fine. He didn't feel any type of concerns when he was doing cuts and movement. So it looked like he was going to be good to go for this year.
Defensively, this team last year was kind of a wreck at times. And was it the SMU game where they just scored like everybody scored 100 on each other, and it just felt like it would never end, I guess. Pretty exciting if you're a fantasy player, obviously. They lose a ton of players in this secondary. I think it's their top four guys by snap count. But I'm curious to ask you here, sort of like the offensive line helping me make sense of this position, because they had so many guys who missed a lot of time last year. Like, are the four guys – obviously, they lost their top four guys by snap count. Were those actually their four best players? What's the level of drop off from those departures?
There's a lot, and you know, you start up front. Derek Parrish was having an incredible year. He's the guy that had 4.5 sacks in the Texas Tech game alone, and he ended up suffering a pectoral injury in the next game, so he was out. So you sort of take him off the board and his stats because he wasn't there a lot of the time. But then you have a DeAnthony Jones, the other edge rusher, who was a big part of things. And then you look at the second level, and you had Donovan Mooden was a big part of what they did at the linebacker position. And then you go through the secondary, and they lose some guys there. So yeah, it collectively. These are guys that played a big role and are going to – those are numbers and snaps that are going to be hard to replace for Houston, because the next wave that they have are guys that have had some experience, but they're not on the same level. And that goes back to what we talked about having Big 12-type players, and they're going to have to go out and, you know, the transfer portal is the way that Dana Holgorsen has filled some of these holes. The big one is David, hope I pronounce his name right, David Aguwubu from Oklahoma. He was an all Big 12 performer. He played linebacker. They're going to move him to the rush end to bring some help there. So, you know, they went out this offseason and got guys like him. But, you know, those are some big numbers, especially up front, that they're going to have to replace.
So it sounds like maybe in the secondary, the concern is not quite as great as maybe what the losses would look like.
Yeah. You know, they got like a Dari Halsey. He's going to be a big one that they went out and got. They did lose. I'm trying to think of the other. They had a guy from Texas Southern on the FCS level. He had five interceptions last year. So he'll be a big one that they can plug in. But, you know,
Isaiah Hamilton.
Yeah. Hamilton. And then a couple of years ago, though, I mean, just last year they were in this situation. They played all of last year with two new corners, and really they lost a third one with Alex Hogan getting hurt. And, you know, the year before they had Demarion Williams and Marcus Jones, who were both in the NFL. So, you know, that secondary has sort of had some turnover the last few years, and it's just a matter of, you know, they've had to go out and get some guys through the portal. A guy like Hassan Hippolyte, who played safety for them, is going to move to a linebacker spot. So they've got some moving pieces right now. I would say coming out of the spring, linebacker is the biggest concern for them. They lose one to grades recently with Ish Harris. He was from Texas A&M. If I had to point where there's going to be some answers or need to be answers in the summer, it's at that linebacker spot.
Makes a lot of sense. Joseph, where would you say is the biggest drop off from starters to backups on this team, not including quarterback, obviously, or maybe not, obviously, since the Coley kid is maybe not terrible.
O-line.
Where would you say is the big drop off? O-line. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's the O-line, just because, I mean, you've got some quality guys in there. You've got some guys that have some experience, but they, and this goes back not just the last year or the last 2 years. They really number wise, for whatever reason, didn't do as good of a job getting those guys in position to have some quality backups. So, and then you couple that with the seven that you lose in the transfer portal, even though they weren't starters or considered, you know, top quality backups, you know, you still lose those numbers that you have to replace. So, yeah, there's some work to do on the offensive line, and I think that also factored into why you didn't see Brandon Jones, the former offensive line coach, return this offseason. They just felt like at that position, they needed to do a better job.
Makes a lot of sense. Last year, the kicking game struggled pretty mightily at times. I mean, they were what, 1 of 5 on field goals over 40 yards, and not terrible actually on some of the shorter stuff. They just couldn't make the kicks in that sort of 40 to 45 yard range, which are critical kicks oftentimes. They lose both kickers. What's the status there?
Well, they you're right. You know, kicking was sort of an adventure last year, and how it went. They went out, and again, the portal will play a role in this. They've got a Jack Martin who played at Alabama. They'll see how that goes. And then, the name is skipping me here. They have one returner.
Ramsey or Baxa?
Ramsey and Baxa are both gone. Those are the two that they lost. Ramsey, the way Dana would envision doing this is that he had one do kickoffs and one handle PATs and field goals. I would assume right now that Martin would be the guy to handle field goals, because they don't really have anybody that has, you know, a lot of attempts on the collegiate level. So they might have to go that direction early on. So we may just see, you know, one guy. So I'm not sure, but this will be an area that, you know, Data, he likes for, you know, he'll go for it on fourth down and do a lot of that stuff. But, you know, when you need some field goals or you need some points on the board, especially moving to the Big 12, they're going to need to produce this year.
Interestingly, with their schedule, and something always got to track in the Big 12 when you play those non-conference games, is do you get the 5 home games or do you get the 5 road games? They do get 5 home games this year. Some of the trips, though, are difficult places to play at UCF, at Baylor, at Kansas State, and at Texas Tech. They're going to have to play well at home. I guess that, like, in a hot start here will be pretty important with UTSA coming to town. Like, that's one they almost have to get off the bat.
Right. They in total, they have 7 games that they don't leave the city of Houston. That includes Rice and then a non-conference game against Sam Houston. And then I think the farther trips are the last one of the years at UCF, and then they go to Manhattan for Kansas State. So it's a really manageable schedule. There's not a lot of, like, a back-to-back stretches, that kind of stuff that you have to worry about. But you're right. Just right out of the get-go, UTSA is a really good program. What Jeff Traylor's done over there and having a veteran quarterback with Frank Harris. Houston got pushed to the limit last year and needed 3 overtimes just to win in San Antonio. So that's not a gimme on the schedule. And then you look at what they have to do a couple of weeks later, and then they open against TCU in their Big 12 debut. So the home schedule, I think that there's some potential there with, you know, West Virginia is some people aren't real high on them right now. Well, you know, what do you get from Oklahoma State? Cincinnati's probably not going to be as dominant as they were in the past few years. So, you know, those are some home games that you're going to need to grab a win, because you're right, that schedule, it doesn't get any easier. You don't have any more Temples and Tulsas and stuff like that. And frankly, they didn't beat Tulsa. You know, and they didn't beat the two lanes. So they're going to need to step it up with this move to the Big 12. And that means on every front, Bud, not just on the field, just, you know, a lot of the things that they're doing facility-wise and budget-wise and getting some new money in that they just haven't had for the last 20-plus years.
Well, to give them a little bit of credit on this Tulsa thing, I think in hindsight, like, Tulsa was not a better team than we realized, but had better individual players than we realized. Like two corners, two receivers who are either in the league or will play in the league. Auburn took both their tackles, and one's going to start, and the other one's going to be their top swing tackle. And Oklahoma State took their top linebacker. So, like, Phillip Montgomery, I know they didn't win a lot of ball games, and Georgia Southern took their quarterback. Like, there's actually like some decent players on that roster. But yeah, certainly that's not a program you can be losing to if you're Houston. We'll be really, really excited to follow the Cougars this year. And Joseph, where can everybody follow you on the socials?
I'm on Twitter at Joseph_Duarte. And then you can follow the Cougars on HoustonChronicle.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, bud.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Bud Elliott here. Welcome back again to the Cover 3 Podcast. This is my summer school series. If you're hearing this one, I'm wearing a blue shirt. You can tell on the day that we did this, I was sick. But luckily, I don't have to do most of the talking in this episode. We're talking Syracuse. I'm going to News Magician. That's Mike Ostrowski. Mike, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me on. I love talking to me some Cuse football.
Always going to go back to my old haunts of SB Nation, and you guys do a tremendous job over there for sure. Last year, a nice rebound season for Syracuse, returned to a bowl game, 7-6. New offense looked quite a bit better, you know, than it had looked. Defense was thin and yet stayed fairly healthy at some of the key spots and was able to make large improvements there. What was it like to cover this team last year?
It was a whirlwind of emotions, and I think the best way to put it is if they had won the seven games in a different order, the reaction would be a lot different. But to start off 6-0, to be ranked, to have much greater aspirations, and to be on the verge of beating Clemson in Death Valley, and then everything just fell apart from there, it kind of seemed like the whole world was coming down on Syracuse near the end of last season, but it was still a successful season. Going into the year, the goal was to make a bowl game, and they did that. And considering how many injuries they had, especially on the defensive side of the ball, in my eyes, it's still a year that has been one of the best years in recent memory for Syracuse.
Offensively, this team improved quite a bit, all the way to 62nd, at least in Bill Connolly's ratings. I think they were certainly better than that at times during the year. Carrot Schrader got dinged up a little bit, but still had a pretty solid season, 50% success rate, you know, 65% completion, 17-7 ratio. Where have you seen him grow this offseason, or where is he attempting to get better?
Well, in the offseason, he underwent a surgery, so he actually missed spring camp. But prior to that, what he really needs to work on, I should say prior to that, what he was doing well was connecting with Aronde Gadsden. What he needs to do moving forward is find himself a number two receiver, because if you've only got one receiving option, you're going to be doubled all day long. He is much more of a on-the-run passer than a stand-in-the-pocket passer. That being said, he's improved in that regard. He's been able to read his line better, knows when to run, and isn't instinctively taking off the second he can. He's been much better at going through his progressions. And I think this year it's going to be vital he continues to do that with a suspect O-line, some maybe more variety in the receiving core. We should get to that in a second. But this is his senior year, his last chance to show what he can do in college. And I think going out, coming off a year where he threw for over 2,600 yards, expect that number to go up even higher this year.
Last year, he was able to lean on the run game. Sean Tucker, one of the best backs in the ACC in a while. Between rushes and catches, he had 260 touches on the season for, almost 1,300 yards. So a really nice all-purpose season there. A really nice season for Tucker. Not that they can totally replace him, but how are they going to attempt to replace him?
Well, LaQuint Allen will be the new bell cow back. Now, don't expect him to rush for another 1,000 yards right out of the gate. We should see a little more variety in the backfield. There are some other guys on the roster. Ike Davis could make an impact. Joshua Escobar, who played fairly well in New Mexico before he transferred to Syracuse last year. He didn't really see much usage, but he had a lot more reps in spring camp. I do think he'll rotate in a bit as at least a third down, short yardage situation back. But one thing with LaQuint Allen that he does have that Sean Tucker also had is that pass catching ability. In spring camp, I saw a lot of him being used as a receiver inside the red zone. And I expect that to be the case this coming year. He's got great hands for a running back, and expect that to be the norm for the Syracuse offense.
At receiver, Gadsden is, I think, one of the more underrated players nationally. You don't hear a lot of national shows talk about him, but I know he did come up recently in our Cover 3 skill position player draft. So, and we are trying to give him some love. A guy is kind of like a hybrid receiver, tight end type, but a dude that the body style is increasingly being used across pro sports and is kind of a matchup nightmare. Who do you project being the complement to him? Because obviously he's the dude. Who can be the two?
According to Dino himself, he said Isaiah Jones, who he was off to an okay start to the year last year before getting knocked out in the Purdue game in week 3. He was out for the rest of the season. At that point, he only had 4 catches, but Dino admitted that the plan going into the season was for Jones to be the number one receiver. And everything we saw in spring camp seems that he's pretty darn close to at least getting that number two spot locked back up. He still needs to work on the consistency a little bit, as do a lot of people in his SU room, but he'd be my pick to emerge as that number two threat. You've also got some streaky deep guys, Marcus Adams, Damian Alford. They've had their flashy plays, but again, the consistency, you hear a lot of that where they have their moments, but can they do it on a game-to-game basis is the big question.
Makes a lot of sense. I remember Isaiah Jones was a pretty good player for Coco High School, which is, kind of near me here. Definitely a guy that has some real upside. It's got to be 4 or 5 years ago, though, that he was in school there. Got some experience on him. Offensive line-wise, this is an area that I've sort of circled to ask you about, and one that would concern me a little bit because, Syracuse loses Matthew Bergeron, who was like a second or third round pick, I think, at tackle.
Second round of the Falcons.
Second rounder, yeah. And they also lose Dakota Davis, who – I'm not going to tell you Dakota Davis was great by the numbers, but he was better than anybody else they had at tackle because he played almost every single one of their snaps on the season. So how is Syracuse attempting to replace both tackles?
Well, so far, not to be frank, it's not going too well. In spring camp, that had to be the most glaring issue of concern. It's mainly guys that have been on the roster. You've got Enrique Cruz, who was a backup over at left tackle. Kalen Ellis, one of the only returning stars from last year at the guard. Josh Iona, most likely going to be the center. Chris Blake at right guard, who has a lot of injury concerns. He was out again in spring camp, so we don't know if he's going to be ready for fall or not. We haven't had a clear answer on that. And then Joe Moore, a JUCO transfer over at the right tackle spot. He was okay. I think he still has a bit of a learning curve to get back to the true Division I level tackle, but the right side is the bigger area of concern. It did not look good at all in spring camp, and that's going against a very young defensive line. Maybe a line with a lot of talent, but not proven talent. So if there's one position that I think needs more reinforcements, and to be fair, is getting more reinforcements over the summer with a couple more JUCO prospects, is the O-line. It's not in good shape right now. It's been the reason why Syracuse has struggled for years on end, and I am glad that Dino is addressing it with more guys at the portal.
For sure. I will say this year particularly, the tackle crop has been poor in the portal. And it's almost always barren, but I mean, I know we've had Ohio State on here. We've had a number of programs on here. Oregon celebrating getting a guy from Rhode Island, right? And like Ohio State probably needed two and only got one. So if those level of programs are struggling to get competent tackles, it certainly speaks to just the difficulty of doing so within the portal. Like I know, I mean, you kind of got to get creative at times and get guys who, you know, can maybe they're more true guards, but they have enough footwork, but it's not the length to play out there and make it work potentially. But we'll certainly monitor who they have coming in from the JUCO ranks this summer and how they look in the fall by following your coverage. In your mind, this offense is not better than last year's offense, right?
No, the offense, okay, I would say, is probably a little worse. Not game-changing worse, but not having Sean Tucker hurts. Not having a great O-line hurts a lot. And it's going to take them a little time. Now, they have the same situation as last year where they front-loaded their schedule with a lot of the easy opponents. They started off with Colgate, Western Michigan, at Purdue, and then come home to Army. So you figure that's two, probably three wins right there. Then you get into the nightmare portion of the schedule again, like this last year, where you've got Clemson, North Carolina, Florida State, back to back to back. And that's where it's really going to see, can they keep up against the top teams in the ACC, getting thrown right from non-conference play into their three hardest matchups of the season?
Absolutely. Let me ask you a question about this defense then. I just got done with our Texas Tech site, and they're really, really excited about the transfer they took from Syracuse on the defensive line. Like Greer and Linton seem to be guys who were pretty coveted in the portal. I went back and looked at my notes from last year's summer school, and I know that like defensive line depth and size was a concern. Are there young guys that are expected to step up for Syracuse here and fill some of those losses?
Now, there are a few people coming back that were injured early last year, a.k.a. Stephon Thompson as a LB, who basically plays the line most of the time. But as far as losing gear stings a lot, you still got Kevin Darton and Terry Lockett, who's also coming back from injury. Caleb Okechukwu is the big guy, the only big physical guy, too, on the line. It's still a little thinner than you would like from a defensive line group. But at the very least, you've got guys who picked up a lot of experience last year. It should be a little better, but the two lines, the offensive line and the defensive line, are still probably the thinnest group on this team. It's not as big of a concern, especially when you've got the 3-3-5 where you're not relying a ton on the guys up front, but it's still a deterrent. It's still a reason why this team has the potential to be good, but not great.
I know that they have a new defensive coordinator up there. Can you tell me about the differences in the scheme they might have?
Yeah, Rocky Long, the godfather of the 3-3-5. Now, that being said, they actually ran a lot of 4-2-5 in the spring, which is also what Nick Monroe ran back in the Pinstripe Bowl before he left for Minnesota. It's interesting because you think bringing them into a system that SU has run for years pretty well, but they've run the 4-2-5, at least from what we've seen, just as well. So taking advantage of, there were a couple LBs who were out in spring camp, Stephon Thompson being the main one. So being able to have a little more variety in your defensive scheme, I think, is going to pay dividends, because near the end of the season, teams understood that SU could not defend against the run, and they just gouged them week after week. That was really what, in my opinion, tore the season off the tracks. If they can adjust to that this year, I think it'll do a lot better at least limiting teams from running hog wild on them. And the other thing about the defense is it's the kind of the same issue as in years past, where the first teamers are all great, but there is a severe concern with depth at pretty much every position. They're getting a lot of transfers, but to be honest, a lot of that seems to be them building towards 2024 and not guys who are going to be ready to start this year. So they really have to prey on a healthy team.
And look, sometimes teams in college football do stay healthy, right? I don't know if you ever read Phil Steele. He talks classically, yep, how when Oklahoma won the title in Bob Stoops' second year there with the Sooners, they didn't lose a single player to injury all year. So, like, we do see it occasionally that it happens, but certainly depth is a concern for Syracuse here, as you described. In the secondary, so by snap count, they only lost one of their top five guys, but obviously Carter and Williams, because they were injured part of the year, didn't, you know, play entire starters reps for the season. But how confident are you in, like, Barron and Simmons and Clark and Johnson to step up, or are we worried about a drop-off here?
I'm not concerned about most of those guys. Isaiah Johnson will be fine as the number one corner. Number two, a breakout candidate in my eyes, Jeremiah Wilson. He had a phenomenal camp. It seemed like he was picking the ball off every time you looked at him. Some of the best coverage in one-on-one drills we saw in the spring. So I expect him to be outside on the other side. Elijah Clark, he's fine. He'll rebound. As for the rest of that group, there are some challengers coming in with Jaden Gold and Jaden Bellamy, two young guys, both played at the same high school, Virgin Catholic in New Jersey. They went to bigger schools, redshirted, and now SU's got them for the next 4 years. They both had very good camps. I expect both of them to challenge for some significant playing time. And that's one thing that we should see the defense do more of, as long as they're healthy. At least in drills, Rocky Long, we saw, loves to rotate guys in and out as much as he can, keep the offense guessing. And that worked a pretty good effect, granted, against other Syracuse players. But as long as these guys do get enough reps that they're still seeing the field but not gassing themselves, it should be a more balanced defense than last year, where it was obvious that they had one way to attack them that they could not defend, and that was pretty much it.
I'm really interested to see this team play this year. I think Dino, you know, does a good job. It strikes me that Syracuse, being a program that is a pretty high academic program, right? Like, we talk often about Stanford and Cal and Northwestern, Vanderbilt, the struggles they have in the portal era with getting players in due to, you know, credits transferring and whatnot. But, you know, Syracuse probably belongs in that discussion to some extent as well, much like a Boston College that, you know, occasionally struggles to get guys in. And I'm excited to watch, you know, Rocky Long. I think Dino is kind of one of the true characters in coaching, a guy that, you know, yeah, I always enjoy talking to him when I see him. There's a lot of win up. Like, if you get past that triumvirate of Clemson, North Carolina, Florida State, like, Virginia Tech seems very beatable. Boston College, certainly beatable. Pitt is not a juggernaut. I mean, Pitt would be favored most likely, yeah, but not by a ton. Is that game a neutral site game, by the way?
What's that? Yankee, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yankee Stadium.
That's kind of, hopefully the turf will be a little bit better than it was for the
jeez.
Gosh, that was.
I hope so.
Dude, that was something,
man. The players hated it.
Yeah. I listened to the first half of that on the radio. I was covering the Under Armour All-America game. I was like, mm-hmm, this sounds terrible. I saw it on TV. I was like, oh, my God. Like, I'd fake an injury just to get off this thing. And then Wake, certainly, we'll see how a lot of that comes down to the quarterback there. I mean, do you think that they're a bowl team?
Syracuse or Wake?
No, Syracuse, excuse me.
Syracuse, if they could go 7-5 with last year's schedule, they can absolutely get 6 wins in the regular season with this schedule. Like you said, there's those 3 weeks that you can't really pencil in any of them as anything but a loss right now. But this is a team that, again, could start 4-0. I think they'll, at Purdue, even with a revamped, a new coach, a very different roster, I don't know if I can pencil that in as a win. But if they start the year off strong, survive the gauntlet in the middle, and then finish the year strong, then, like you said, at the back end, there's also at Georgia Tech. I know they brought in, it's a very different team this year, probably a very improved team, but I think that's still a winnable game too. So you've got,
oh, certainly,
you've got probably 4-5 games that you should win, and another three or four coin flips. So as long as you're 500 in the coin flips, you're making a bowl again.
No doubt about it. You can also follow him _Mike Ostrowski. Mike, I really appreciate the time today, man.
Of course. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey guys, Bud Elliott back here again on Cover 3. It's another summer school episode today. We are talking Ole Miss, and if you want the best Ole Miss coverage, you go to Inside the Rebels. My man, David Johnson, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you, Bud. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I know we were talking a little pre-show that David went to most of the spring practices out there. Their Ole Miss coverage is absolutely dialed. Ole Miss last year, 8-5. Bill Connelly in the power ratings had him 18th. I think ESPN had him like 22nd. So a pretty nice season there for the Rebels. Played pretty well on offense. Defense was a bit up and down at times. I'll start on the offensive side of the ball with Lane, you pretty much expect they're going to score points every single year because the guy just – another Ole Miss game, another guy running wide open for the Rebs. So quarterback situation, Dave, is where I have to start. I'm interested in this. They took Spencer Sanders from Oklahoma State, and we've already done the Oklahoma State episode. Not really sure how big of a loss that is for the Cowboys based on how he played last year. But in prior years, he had played well. They get Jackson Dart coming back. They took Walker Howard from LSU. How do you see this position sorting itself out?
Yeah, I think it's Jackson Dart's job. I watched 12 of 15 spring practices, and Jackson Dart won every one of them, if you want to talk about quarterback comparisons. Now, in the Grove Bowl, and we all know the spring games can kind of be scripted to come out the way everybody wants them to come out. Spencer Sanders looked great. But if you want to take the spring as a whole, Jackson Dart held his own and, if not, gained ground in the quarterback battle. Walker Howard is the guy of the future. Everybody knows that. I think Walker even knows that. And, I think he's even admitted that. You know, he's anxious to learn behind Jackson Dart and Spencer Sanders. And when Jackson Dart goes to the NFL draft or graduates, the job is Walker Howard's because Spencer Sanders only has this 1 year left to play. A little perplexing, Sanders coming into Ole Miss to take that spot, knowing he's got to battle a returning starter. But he's still here. He's on campus this summer. He came back. And we'll see if he's here when fall camp opens up. I think that's where we have to leave it because I do think this job belongs to Jackson Dart.
There were some things I thought Dart did well last year. Sack avoidance is something we don't talk about all the time on the show, but his sack avoidance was really, really good. Sacked on less than 5% of his dropbacks. I know Ole Miss is a lot of quick game and screens and whatnot, but it did feel like he was pretty good at dodging sacks. However, he did hold on to the ball a lot in dodging some of that pressure and then would take some chances throwing it. 11 picks is against 20 touchdowns, a little high. What differences have you seen in Dart this spring?
Yeah, I think you see a maturation process where he has a better grasp of the offense. He's much more comfortable in his own skin, if you will. He's not trying to over-impress. If the pass is not there, he's throwing it away, and he's coming back on the next down to try to make the yardage. And as you just mentioned, he's a sneaky good runner as well. Jackson Dart is not a one-dimensional drop back quarterback who cannot run. He can make things happen when he gets out in the open field. All three of those Ole Miss quarterbacks have that tangible about them. But, Jackson Dart, I mean, I think he's the guy. And of course, he's got Quinshon Judkins in the backfield, and that's going to help the Ole Miss passing game too because opposing defenses are going to have to respect the Rebels' ability to run the football.
speaking of running the football, Quinshon Judkins was a revelation last year as a freshman, almost 1,600 yards, did score 16 touchdowns, a first down on almost a third of his carries. Did you see this coming? Because like
Yeah,
we heard a little buzz, but not 1,600 yards buzz.
No. Listen, you know, so he was an early enrollee, so we got to watch him in spring ball last year, and you know, it takes a little while to get to know the freshman's numbers and everything, and we're like, man, who's that number four out there? Look him up. That's Quinshon Judkins. Okay, man, this kid's got a chance. The way he was breaking tackles and spinning off would-be tacklers, and then we saw that carry over into fall camp. So. Did we know he was going to run for 1,600 yards and score 16 touchdowns? No. But did we think he could be a factor in the Ole Miss offense? Absolutely. He is a special talent. I'll be honest with you. He's the best collegiate running back I've ever covered. And, you know, he's
– I got to ask you, were you there for Deuce McAllister?
No, I was not. But
okay, because that's the obvious Ole Miss one my head would go to.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But no, I've been here on this beat for 13 years. He's the best one to ever come through, obviously. And, you know, I just think that, you know, his sophomore season, he's handled that success so well. You know, and we asked him, hey, you know, and everybody knows he's got a huge NIL deal at Ole Miss. You know, we asked him, hey, Quinshon, does that put more pressure on you? And he's like, no. He's like, you know, I'm going to play my game. I know what I've got to do. I know what I can do. And that's what I'm going to do. And I believe him, to be honest with you. A little three-star recruit, and I don't mean little, but, you know, out of Pike Road, Alabama High School. And he's turned into one of the biggest stars in the college game. And I think he's going to carry it on this year.
I was talking to Cole Kublik on the SEC Network, and he thinks Judkins is the best running back in the country. I was like, that's high praise, man. Like I'm kind of a Nick Singleton guy, I think, for Penn State, but like clearly, I mean, he's in that discussion to be sure. And they threw the ball very well last year off play action. They threw the ball very well on rundowns. But when they got behind the chains, there was a noticeable drop off. I mean, they were like bottom half of the country in efficiency when they were behind the chains. And like that's to me. It kind of says some stuff about what this team was as a drop back passing team, like play action, RPO, when the opponents had to actually have some respect for the run, because Judkins is a stud, they were good throwing it. When they weren't, it was problematic. And now they lose Malik Heath and Jonathan Mingo, but I like some of the names they brought in as transfers. Do you think this room is like as good as it was last year, the pass catchers?
I don't know. We've seen what Zachary Franklin can do at UTSA. You know, he's got to do that in, you know, in the SEC. And, you know, that question remains to be seen as to whether or not he can do it. You know, there are good receivers in that room. There's no Jonathan Mingo. And even, you know, I don't know if there's a Malik Heath. And you know, you talk about Heath, but it looks like Heath is about, you know, he signed as a free agent with the Green Bay Packers. Looks like he's going to make that roster, you know, reading things out of Green Bay. So, you know, at Mingo, of course, being a second-round draft pick, I'm not going to go as far as to say they've replaced those guys. But, you know, Lane Kiffin's never short of guys to catch the football. They've got a good room. It's just a question of which one of those young guys, along with Zachary Franklin, is going to emerge as the go-to guy. And honestly, Bud, they helped themselves in the passing game at the tight end position as well. You haven't seen them throw to the tight ends very much. Not last year. Michael Trigg had some injury issues and some other issues. The USC transfer, he's back, but they went and got Caden Priestcorn, a kid that's highly rated out of the portal from Memphis. And, you know, Priestcorn is a 6'6", 250-pound, prototypical NFL tight end who can do everything. He can run good routes. He can catch the ball. He's got speed. He can put his hand in the dirt, block somebody. And that gives Ole Miss two tight ends that I think you're going to see them utilize this year.
That makes a lot of sense. I play a little college football DFS, like the daily fantasy stuff, and some of the, you know, no free ads on the show, but the various companies out there, and pre-scoring was reasonably priced pretty often last year for Memphis, and I was all happy to take it for sure. Offensive line wise, Nick Broeker does leave on the offensive line. Everybody else who played a decent number of snaps returns, though, for a pretty veteran unit, which was decent, but like not great last year. I guess you could say. I mean, if you're in the West, you got to block a lot of guys who are going to, you know, make money in the game for a long time. They take what, one transfer? I think it was.
No, they took two transfers. They took Vic Kearney from Washington and Quincy McGee from UAB. And I'm not sure either of those guys will be the answer at Broeker's guard position. I think I'd keep my eyes on honestly, a true freshman named Bryson Sanders, who is out of the state of Tennessee, looked very good in the spring. I would not say Sanders would be starting when they play Mercer and Tulane early in the year, but let this season wear on, and I think Bryson Sanders could work himself into that lineup.
I mean, that would be very interesting, but certainly a guy that's probably in their, you know, first two off the bench if he's not starting.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you know, there's a guy, Eli Acker, been here for a long time, a veteran. Acker would also be a candidate to fill that Broeker spot.
Makes a lot of sense. Defensively, they do make a coordinator change. They bring in Pete Golding. I don't know if we've seen a bigger gap between the fan opinion of a coach and the head coach's opinion of a coordinator than we did with Pete Golding. I mean, like Nick Saban clearly had a lot of respect for Pete Golding, and I mean, got to respect the guy's acumen quite a bit. They made it a change there after Golding left, bringing in Kevin Steele in Tuscaloosa. What has the defense looked like under Golding so far? Like, are there noticeable differences? Can he run what he wants to run?
Yeah, I think he can to an extent. Now, you know, we all know he doesn't have the same bullets at Ole Miss in his gun as he had at Alabama yet. Golding, I think his biggest impact thus far has been on the recruiting trail. I mean, he is getting those caliber players to have an interest in Ole Miss, to visit, and some of them are already even in the commit column. From a defensive scheme standpoint, you're going to see a lot of multiple stuff. They're going to be more aggressive. I think you're going to see Ole Miss rush the quarterback, you know, off the edge, in the middle of that defensive line. And the big thing about their defensive line, they've got Seth Johnson returning as well as Jared Ivey, both accomplished starters at the Power 5 level. But the defensive tackle positions where J.J. Pegues, the Auburn transfer, sits now, they went and got Josh Harris from North Carolina State.
I love this kid.
Look, I do too. And what I saw in the spring is, you know, the guards and centers are having to go, okay, which one are we going to double team this time? Because one of them is going man-on-man and free. Most of the time that was Pegues, and Pegues can get to the quarterback. So I think you're going to see an improvement in the pass rush. The linebackers, they got Jeremiah Jean-Baptiste from UCF, Monty Montgomery from Louisville. I think that's pretty much a wash with what they had last year. Both of those guys will be serviceable SEC linebackers. Where the big question mark is on the defensive side of the ball is on the back end. Because when you look at what they lost in the transfer portal, it's tough to replace, and who they lost them to. Davison Igbignosin went to Ohio State. Tysheem Johnson went to Oregon. Miles Battle went to Utah. So, you know, all three of those guys would have been starters in the Ole Miss secondary. They're going to be starting for other top 25 Power 5 teams this fall. So Ole Miss has gone to the portal, and they've tried to replace this talent. I don't know if they have, just to be honest with you. And, you know, that's something that you're going to have to watch as the season progresses. They've gotten several transfer portal kids in. You know, they've got a couple of key guys returning back there, but to me, that's the question. They'll be good on the defensive line. Depth's not great, but the first unit will be very good. Linebackers will be serviceable. How's that back end? How's the secondary? Because, again, you go back to losing those three guys, and that hurts a lot.
So if you want a fun Josh Harris story, he's got to be like a senior, right? Or
I think he's got 2 years.
Fourth year in college?
I think he's got – during COVID, I think he's got 2 years left.
Okay, so – it would have been the remember the Army All-American Combine that they do every year in the Alamo Dome down there in San Antonio. And this guy and they run a couple thousand kids through there. So it's hard to keep track of them all. But this guy was just straight up dominating people and he got his jersey ripped off, okay? But I didn't see him before he got the jersey ripped off. So this guy had no jersey and no number. And so you're there in the dome in the stands trying to figure, I'm like, who the heck is this guy? And like, I didn't figure it out until a while later. It's like, oh, okay, that the hair kind of looks similar, and that's that guy. But like, I think there's some potential there. Like, I know he may not be an amazing pass rusher, but he's a wide body who's got some heavy hands. I'm glad you mentioned the secondary stuff, and I want to circle back to that. But first, I have a real concern. I feel like with pass rush here on this team, like it. Tavius Robinson basically never came off the field and was their most effective pass rusher, I thought, by a lot. Like, how do they replace Tavius Robinson?
Yeah, I don't know that you do. You've got Cedric Johnson, didn't go through spring, but he should be 100% when fall camp opens up. Jared Ivey, who's proved himself at Georgia Tech, and he was a valuable asset for Ole Miss last year. But there, you know, Pete Golding's going to do some creative things. I think you're going to see linebackers blitzing more often. You're going to see the defensive line pin their ears back and come after it more often. And again, I think Josh Harris is the key, because you put that big body along with Piggy's huge athletic body there in the middle of the defense, and they're going to be stunning and whatnot. You know, Josh Harris is somebody you've got to account for. And, again, not a great pass rusher, but man, he's a wall against the run. And J.J. Pegues is a great pass rusher. So, you know, I think it's kind of pick your poison there. I think they're going to be okay. I really and truly do. You know, they've got a few guys behind those guys that will be able to give them some pretty good snaps, I think. My question so much is not – the defensive front as much as it is the back end, because the back end, we just don't know. We just don't know. John Saunders transferred from Miami of Ohio, had a really good spring, I think. And I think he's going to have a good season, but you know, you lose guys to Utah, Oregon and Ohio State, and you're getting them in from Liberty and Miami of Ohio. That should raise a question mark right there.
So I do have a question on Deshaun Gaddy. He was one of my favorite guys 5-6 years ago as a recruit, and I really couldn't figure out why he wasn't a Power 5 guy, and maybe he didn't run a good verified time. But when I watched him in 7 on, I liked him. I thought North Texas kind of got a steal, and there's like a little like, all right, okay, I wasn't crazy now that Ole Miss took him. Like, does he look okay?
You know, Deshaun Gaddy just got to Ole Miss at the end of the school year. Wasn't here for spring ball, so we haven't seen him. You know, he's here. He's 100% healthy, no injury issues whatsoever. Had a couple of hurdles to get over to get into school in time, because if you recall, he committed to Ole Miss way back in the first transfer portal cycle. We expected him here in January. He never showed up and finally did. I want to say it was at the very end of May, 1st of June. So only been here for a few days, few weeks. But he's another body you can throw back there. And like you, I'm impressed with his film at North Texas. And I think he's gonna be a starter. I hope he is. And, you know, definitely going to be a part of the rotation back there.
some of this portal coverage, I know you've been doing this a long time, as have I. It kind of harkens back to some of these JUCO days where I was like, all right, when's Kickle graduate?
Yeah, no kidding. You're exactly right, man. The portal is I really don't know how to describe it because it'll be a different way tomorrow. And you know, while you may know what the and you gotta you can't talk about the portal without talking about NIL. And you know, while I may know what Ole Miss's NIL deal is for a kid, I have no idea what Alabama's put together or Auburn's put together. And you know, that's where the guessing comes in, and the analysis and whatnot. But yeah, it's a brave new world out there.
Absolutely. We don't talk a lot of special teams on the show, but I do need to ask you here because Ole Miss's kicker last year, I don't follow kickers a lot, but like Jonathan Cruz was absolutely nailed. So 7 of 8 on stuff, 45 yards plus, missed one extra point, but you know, made 48 of them. Just one of the absolute best kickers in the country. He's gone and in a team that probably will play a good number of close ball games. How does their kicking situation look?
Yeah, Caden Costa's back. If you remember, go back, you know, two seasons ago as a true freshman, he was a starting kicker for Ole Miss. And Caden got kind of got burned by the NCAA a little bit on some illegal supplements that I think he bought at GNC that couldn't be in his body. And he got popped on a test for it.
The kicker's getting PEDs.
Yeah, exactly. So man, that was a funny thing. So he was suspended basically for a year. I think he could have come back and kicked in the Egg Bowl, but as you mentioned, Jonathan Cruz was doing such a good job. So he's got he redshirted last year. So he'll be back as a redshirt sophomore, and he's going to be your kicker. You know, Ole Miss.
Will he do kickoffs too, David?
Well, that's the question, because they did bring in a kid from Texas A&M through the portal. And, you know, we don't know. Costa's going to be your field goal extra point kicker. This kid could very well handle kickoffs for Costa.
Yeah, Ole Miss was a team last year. I just thought if they could just kick it in the end zone, would be more effective than some of their kick coverage.
Yeah, definitely
was. Question for you: so you're out there at practice. You're watching them. What's the position where the drop off is the largest between the starters to the backups? Not counting quarterback. You know, that position where you're like, oh man, like they got to stay healthy here because the drop off is huge to these backups.
Yeah, defensive line. You know, as good as I like the four projected starters of Seth Johnson, Jared Ivey, J.J. Pegues, and Josh Harris, there's not a lot of depth and experience there. You know, I think going into an SEC season, you know, you feel good if you've got 8 or 9, maybe even 10 that you can rotate in and out. I think Ole Miss is probably at 7 right now. And I think the drop-off is big, particularly at the defensive tackles, between Josh Harris, J.J. Pegues, and what they have behind them. And even at the end spots. I mean, you bring up Tavius Robinson, going to be a huge loss. There's no doubt. They would probably not have beaten Kentucky had it not been for Tavius Robinson there at the end of that game. So defensive line is kind of scary. You know, I have my primary concern is with the secondary, but when you're talking about drop-offs, I think it's the defensive line.
So, schedule-wise, they did not get a lot of favors with this schedule this year. They have to go play Michael Pratt at Tulane, which it's Ole Miss will be favored and should be, but it's not a layup. Like they'll have to. You can't. I mean, their B game probably wins, but if Ole Miss goes plays a D game, like they could be in trouble there in New Orleans. Georgia Tech probably not. Probably not ready to compete on that stage based on how Ole Miss handled them, you know, recent. But it strikes me they have to play on paper the four most talented teams in the league, including at Bama and at Georgia. And then they got some tricky road spots, like going to Auburn. The Egg Bowl is on the road this year. Like, there's a lot of potential variance in this schedule. Like that home game against Arkansas on October 7th is really important. Like they kind of. The stretch at Bama, host LSU, host Arkansas, at Auburn, before you get kind of the reprieve of Vandy, is that's tough.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you bring up the Arkansas game, and I agree with you. It's very, very important for Ole Miss this year. But, you know, what happened between Ole Miss and Arkansas last year? Arkansas ran away from the Rebels. Ole Miss scored some trash points at the end to make it look close. But that game was a blowout at halftime. The year before, with the shootout in Oxford, KJ Jefferson versus who? Matt Corral. Matt Corral won that game for Ole Miss. KJ Jefferson throws a two-point conversion pass out of the back of the end zone that would have won it for Arkansas. So without Matt Corral, I don't like that matchup. I'll be honest with you anymore. KJ is he's a tough dude, okay? He's a talented dude. And, you know, he grew up 20 miles down the road from Oxford, Mississippi. He wanted to come to Ole Miss. This game, Ole Miss did not offer him until very late in the process. He had been committed to Arkansas for a long time. This game means something to KJ Jefferson. So I don't like I don't necessarily like Ole Miss's chances in that game. And then, you know, you're talking about Auburn. Well, who's the head coach at Auburn now? Hugh Freeze. Hey, Hugh doesn't want to lose that game. I can tell you that. He will roll out everything for that game.
If you watch Liberty last year, it's fairly obvious that Hugh Freeze, to me at least, circled some games that they wanted to have. And then I'm not sure – I mean, I don't want to accuse Hugh Freeze of not prepping for certain games week to week, but some of these performances, like you can't lose to New Mexico State, right? I'm kind of wondering if maybe they focus on some of the bigger games there at Liberty. I mean, yeah, he's got to have that ballgame circled. I will say Lane Kiffin has whipped Jimbo on the chalkboard in the recent matchups. Like I think it's just kind of straight out coached him in some of those ball games.
But how does Bobby Petrino factor into that this year? You know, yeah. You're going to have a better A&M team, a team with a better game plan. And
I think so too.
Yeah, you know, so if you want to look at Ole Miss's schedule in totality, the Tulane game is huge. They cannot go to New Orleans and lose. And in the past, Ole Miss has always scheduled that game because the Ole Miss fans love New Orleans. They love to go down there and party on Bourbon Street, have a great time, and then go to the Superdome and outnumber Tulane fans 2-1. This game is no longer in the Superdome. It's in an on-campus stadium at Tulane. And I talked to Ole Miss's AD Keith Carter, who said they were getting between 3,000 and 5,000 tickets. I think that thing is closer to 3. So the stadium seats 30,000. It's early in the year. You can expect 27,000 people pulling for Tulane and 3,000 pulling for Ole Miss. And it's very close confines inside Yulman Stadium. So not going to be an easy place to go, but you've got to win that game. Because if you don't win that game, are you going to beat Arkansas, Auburn, Texas A&M, Alabama? They've got to go to Georgia. I mean, LSU is back. Okay, they're back. I mean, it's a tough schedule. And, you know, if you ask me to pick how they'll finish, I know we're dealing with Lane Kiffin here, and you always got to give him a little bit more credit than what you think he deserves. So I think 8-4, and you go to a bowl game. That would be big, but that means they've got to beat Arkansas or Auburn or Texas A&M or somebody out of that group, LSU, to get to 8 games, to 8 wins. And if you lose at Tulane, I mean, you're looking at Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, and your other 3 non-cons. You got to pick up a 6th win by beating one of those SEC West teams or Georgia. That's not going to happen. So, you know, it is not an easy schedule.
No, it's certainly not. We were sitting around last night after the Elite 11. I was talking to some of the Georgia guys out here, and they're like, "Yeah, we think Georgia will probably have between like 12 and 15 draft picks again." Off this, like, okay, yeah, they'll be pretty good. That's yeah.
I mean, they've got it going on. There's no doubt about it. And you know, a lot of people are writing them off. Well, there's no way they'll win a 3rd national title. I don't believe that. I believe Georgia
I think they could
win it all because there's going to be a quarterback. Kirby's going to have,
especially if Bama doesn't get quarterback figured out.
That's true as well. Yeah. Very, very true. But Bama's going to figure it out.
Yeah, I think so too. Dave, I really appreciate the time. This was fun.
All right, bud. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Everyone is talking about if.
I'm going to go on a limb here, but I like it. I love it.
It's original and heartfelt.
Ta-da!
And the must-see comedy of the summer that's perfect for the whole family.
This is just so exciting.
If. Rated PG. Now playing in theaters.